No, not nearly good enough, just for my own fun. I know, I wish I'd like taken lessons when I was a kid and really stuck to it, but I liked it. I didn't, you know.
Did you, when you were talking about your editor, how much difference is between what you put into the editor and what actually hits the presses?
Well, when I first started out, it used to be that the editor had a lot to say so, until I realized that the editor was sometimes very wrong. Well, what happened with Boys Life, let me tell you the story about Boys Life real quickly, was that when I turned in Boys Life, I was really excited about it. And I thought, you know, I'm going to get the letter back from the publisher that says, we're so very excited about this book, we did not think that you had this kind of book in you. You know, so we're really excited about it. And I was really up. So I did get the letter. The letter came in, and the letter said, Rick, we need to talk to you about this book. Because this book, you know, the book is really about a murder mystery. And everything else besides the mystery should be stripped out of it. Should be stripped out. So basically all the stuff, all the material about the town, much of the material about all the people in the town would have been stripped away. So I said, well, hold that thought, and I'll be up there tomorrow. So I flew overnight to New York to tell them I'm not going to take out what you want me to take out. So when things like that happen, I've had more than one thing like that happen. You begin to say, you know what? You need to trust yourself. Number one, if I spent 9 months working on a book and maybe a year putting it together, I need to trust myself more than I trust an editor who's sitting on the other side of the desk and they don't know the material like I know the material. So as I was going to say, early on in my career, I listened to editors more than I do now. I still listen to editors, but I listen to myself more. Because I believe in myself much more now than I did when I began. Yes?
Well, I just wanted to say, it doesn't really matter to me what you write.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. That's very nice
also,
to say.
I was wondering, in Swanson, how in the world did you come up with Colonel Macklin? Is that a real person?
Well, it's just Colonel Macklin, I think, is a is like the military-industrial complex personified, which is what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be like this guy is like the military-industrial complex, you know, and he's like with no inhibitions. So I don't think it probably was a combination of characters. I can't really say who it was, but it probably was a combination of characters I was watching maybe in the news or whatever at that point in time. So, yeah. Yes?
Tell me a little bit about They Thirst.
They Thirst?
Yeah.
Well, vampire book set in Los Angeles, and basically vampires take over Los Angeles, and they wreak havoc there in Los Angeles. What more do you need to know?
Well, I've read it.
Oh, you read it, okay.
I've read it.
Okay.
One of my favorites. Will you change direction a little bit from They Thirst and Swamps to Swamps?
Yeah, I do. Right.
Anything in the future back to that?
The new book is called The Five, and that it's a little supernatural. I mean, there's a supernatural element. Not horror per se, but I think there's some horrific elements. Well, there are. Yeah, I guess there are. But not horror per se. It's different. It's different than anything I've ever done. So I'm very excited about it.
So with all these books coming out, you're going to be doing more signings, of course.
Well, yeah, I hope so.
Well, we hope so, too. Well,
thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Could you mention something about the research that you did here? Because it seems so detailed, I feel like I'm really there in New York in that time. It's incredible.
You must have really did
a lot of research.
Oh, a lot of research. Started in New York at the map section, New York Public Library. And I got the maps, got the way the city looked. I was able to find some books with actual names of people who actually lived in the city in that era. The research is, had to do a lot of research, you know. And the amazing thing is that without the internet, I probably could not write these books. Because I mean, there's a lot of bogus information on the internet, but there are a lot of great places you can go on the internet to find stuff that you need. And it used to be when I was working on a book, if I was working right along, and I'd come to a point where you know I need to find out something about something, but I have to wait to go to the library tomorrow. So I have to wait, you know. So I have to stop writing and go to the library tomorrow to look this up. If I was to do that in this series, if I was to put the book aside, it would take years to finish one book. So it's so nice now to have the internet to go look up stuff And then also words. You've got to be very careful with language. I mean, the research is constant. You know, you're always constantly researching. I was researching for this. I was also researching for the next book. So it's a constant process.
Well, did it help you move the story or get new ideas that you wouldn't have gotten had you not been doing this research?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And the more you research, the more levels you find in things, and of course the more questions, and you say, well, you know, maybe there's a story in that. Or I've never heard of this before. Maybe this, you know, the thing about Lord Cornbury, and I mentioned that Lord Cornbury, you know, was dressed in women's clothes. That's actually true. It actually is true that Lord Cornbury was the governor of New York at that time, actually dressed for whatever reason in women's clothes and said he was doing it to honor his cousin, the queen. That's actually true. So anyway, I would never have known that. I mean, if I hadn't, you know, worked on Lord Cornbury and, you know, and it just came together, but. Never would have known that. So, yes.
Is your thoughts on or perception of Matthew Corbett between Stephen Hyper and Peter Bedwin changed at all, or has it remained kind of consistent? Because it seems like in Peter Bedwin you're preparing him for something, building.
Yeah. Well. Well. Like
changing who he was and who he is.
Yes. Like I say, also it wasn't going to be a serious. So you know. I took him to a certain point in Speaks of Nyberg where he's going back to New York, and that was kind of be the end of his story. So you have to start adding something to the character to make sure that he's appealing enough and interesting enough to carry a series.
Right.
So that's really what I started doing with Queen of Bedlam. Yeah. And I also don't want him to be static. I mean, I want him to have, like, he does some things in Mr. Slaughter that he probably should not do, and he has maybe an attitude in Mr. Slaughter that he should not have. But I want him to be human, you know. I want him to make mistakes, and those mistakes lead to other things in the story. And I want him to be a real person.
Yeah, that's definitely noticeable that he doesn't.
Yeah, is it that he's right? And he changes in this, and he'll change in the next one too.
Right.
But yet there's always the core of who he is.
Right.
That's not going to change. And basically, the core of who he is was really explained in Speaks of Nyberg, in which he felt like, you know, here's a woman who needs a champion. Because he needs a purpose too. He responds well to being needed. And so when he felt this woman needed him, and that's something that kind of recurs through the book, through the series. If he feels he wants to feel needed, he wants to feel necessary, he wants to feel like he's doing something for people.
Right.
Anyone else? Yeah.
I teach 12th grade English and I use Voice Light for my handbook project.
Oh yeah?
I mean, use some of the video from the website when you're talking to the boy about the challenging. My students really enjoyed it. I'm wondering if you're planning on writing any books geared toward more juvenile or adolescent level that people use in school at all? Or
you know, Voice Life was not written for a young audience, really.
it really
wasn't. You know, but it's been amazing. Voice Life has been amazing to me because it's gotten such a range of readers, from elderly people to kids. And you know, this is the first book I've ever read, so it's a great thing. But I never really sat down to write it for kids, you know. So I don't know how if I said, no, I'm going to sit down and write a book for young readers, I'm not sure that would be me. You know, I'm not sure what would come out of that. You know, I've got plans, like I say, to do the 10 series, and then plans to do the books in between, and that's almost all set up. I mean, I really have books set up till like the end of my possible writing career, you know. So I mean, I would like to think about doing that, but I'm not sure that it would not be stilted. You know what I mean? If I tried to write a book specifically for that age group, it would be stilted in a way. Do you know? Yeah. So. Anyone else? Yes.
Yeah. Could you share with us some of your favorite authors or books that
One that really stands out is probably the writer that got me interested in reading is Ray Bradbury, because he's done so many different types of things, and his short stories I remember reading as a kid, and it awakened, you know, a sense of wonder. And I remember reading his short stories. I remember reading Lewis Carroll, the Alice series, which I really enjoyed, you know, but I remember reading some of the. In science fiction, I enjoyed reading science fiction. But I remember reading and feeling like getting involved with the characters, getting involved with the story, to a point that you don't want it to end. You don't want it to end, because you're going to miss these people when it ends.
Yes.
You know? And
yes.
When you close that book, that particular thing is done, it's over, and you're going to miss that. And I remember feeling that. I remember feeling how that felt. And that's what I'm trying to do with all my work. Because it's a bittersweet feeling. It's a bittersweet feeling to feel you've been in a world, you've enjoyed the characters, yet now you have to leave it. But you sure love the journey.
Yes.
And that's what I'm trying to do. And if I can do that with my work, I'll feel really, really good about it. If I can get that feeling communicated to other people, that would be a good thing. But Ray Bradbury was one of my favorites.
Yes. Did you ever meet Ray Bradbury?
I did.
And
I did.
Like, did you talk about writing with each other?
I met him and he asked me to go hold his cab for him. But that was great because he is a traveler. He travels through different worlds and through different genres of writing. And I thought, this is great that the traveler, the world traveler who travels to many different worlds and many different planets has asked me to go hold his cab for him while he's getting ready to go somewhere.
So did you guys talk about storytelling or writing styles or anything like that?
You know, I was on a panel with Clive Barker and Dean Koontz in Los Angeles. And I think Mr. Bradbury thought I worked in the store. I think he thought I worked in the store. We really didn't. I just said, hello, how are you? And he said, well, how are you? But I think he thought I worked in the store. I believe. I don't know. But he's a great writer. And you know, it'd be great to be able to talk to him and sit down with him at some point. But it was a passing type of thing. Yeah.
I just
want
to say that when I picked up Swan Song, first time I read it, after that, I couldn't get enough. I wanted every book that you had to pick it up. And there's few writers that I've ever felt that way about, where I could, you know, just wanted to get whatever I could get a hold of. And when I thought you went into retirement, I really missed you. I'm glad to have you back now.
Thank you. Well, it took me a while to come back because, you know, I actually thought I was finished. Because actually, after I wrote Speaks of Nightbird and that had that problem with Viking, I wrote another book. It's a World War II novel set in Russia. And because that was so different. And what I was running into was the idea that, you know what, I do a certain type of book, and that's what people want. And I felt like if I did a good job in whatever kind of book I did, I would have readers. And some of the editors and publishers didn't feel that way. So when I finished this other book called The Village and turned it in, it was like, well, this is not what you do. And I hate that. I hate the idea of somebody saying to you, this is what you do and you can't do anything else. I think that's terrible. You know, because each book you try to do the best you can do, and you may decide to do something totally off the wall, something different. And then someone is going to say, no, you can't do that. That's like un-American. That's not right. But that, you know, that was part of why I thought, well, it's just not going to happen. You know. So, but thank you so much. I'm so glad to be back.
Boy's Life and Gone South and Swan Song. Those are like American classics.
Well, thank you.
I really believe
thank
that.
You. I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
So what happened to the Village?
The Village is still sitting in a box. I look back on it, I think, well, you know, I could bring it out. I need to rewrite some of it. But it's so different from anything I've ever done, which is okay. But again, like I was saying, you know, I've got my future sort of mapped out in what I want to do, and that doesn't really fit in what I want to do now. Mm-hmm. So, because I want to focus on the Matthew series, and I also want to do these contemporary books that I have planned. So it doesn't really fit, you know. So it just may never be published. Yes?
Do you think it's a good book?
I think parts of it are very good. Parts of it are not so good.
So you can't have another pen name?
But, you know, I think about that. Right. You see, I think about that. I think that of all my work. Because I'm super critical of my work. And so when I look back at anything, I can look back at this and say, oh, gosh, you know, why didn't I do something a little different here? But then I can say, well, that's a pretty good sentence there. It's a pretty good paragraph there. But I'm never really totally happy with my work. Which I look back on and think, and I say, you know, that's really kind of a good thing. So I'm never satisfied with my work. And it keeps me going. So, well, the next book, maybe the next book will be perfect. The next book will not be perfect. Because perfection can never be reached. But you've got to keep trying for it. You know, you've got to keep trying. And so I'm kind of glad to be self-critical and to say, I'm a long way from being perfect.
But it is a great book. It is a great book. I'm fortunate I got to read it.
Well.
And I say that just so
you need to feel the
title.
Yeah. Okay. So will you keep the title?
keep the title?
Of that book.
The Village?
Okay, yeah. So I'll be looking for it.
Yeah, it's set in Russia during World War II, and it's about a young girl who leaves her town in Russia to become an actress. And what she thinks is a theater group. She's actually joining an army theater group. And these people go out behind the lines and entertain the troops and do these patriotic songs and these patriotic plays to get the soldiers to basically massacre them to keep going and fighting, and you know. And the Village is the Village of Actors.
Yeah. How did you hook up with this publisher? This is a Michigan publisher, right?
Yeah, this is a Michigan publisher.
Right.
Well, he's listening right now. I had seen work that he'd done before, his books. They're all beautiful books. He does a fantastic job. And I admired his work for many years. He was interested in doing it in a way that the publishers in New York were not. Because sometimes the publisher's work in New York, to me, is substandard work. It doesn't look good. The books don't last. You're not getting a good value for your money. And this is a good value for your money. It's a good way. It's going to last you a good long time. It's a good investment, if you want to think of it that way. So that's how we got there.
So your others might go through this publisher?
Yes. Yes. Well, would you like me to read a little bit? Would that be okay? Let me find where I want to read from. Mr. Slaughter, Tyrannus.